ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 30th of March. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. State and territory leaders will meet with the Prime Minister today to try to find solutions to the cascading fuel crisis. The National Cabinet meeting comes as petrol prices reach new highs. Amid predictions, fuel rationing is now an inevitability. Oliver Gordon reports.
Despair at the Bowser.
It hurts us. It hurts us a lot.
Sydney man Eddie paid more than $200 to fill up his tank and is getting flashbacks.
We can't afford to go back into the COVID way of life where we're just locking down. We need to live.
Today, premiers and chief ministers will join the Prime Minister for the second National Cabinet meeting since the start of the Middle East conflict.
We're looking for transparency of our supply chains.
WA Premier Roger Cook joined his fellow state and territory heads in a preparatory meeting over the weekend.
We need to know where the fuel is going, when it's coming in and how much is coming in, and we need to have the ability to direct that strategically to the communities that need it most.
The federal government maintains fuel is continuing to arrive in Australia in the quantities and frequencies the country needs, but it concedes localised shortages have emerged as a result of increased purchasing, particularly for diesel. It's yet to recommend any sort of fuel rationing, but resilience expert and former Deputy Chief of the Air Force, John Blackburn, says it's only a matter of time until it does.
There will be times when certain control measures have to come into place. Let's be honest about it. It's probably a month away. But let's not hide that. Let's just say we'll get to that stage and the government's got a plan because it's working as a team with state and territories. I don't hear that message.
Are you referring to rationing there when you talk about control measures?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we did it in the 1970s. If you've got a demand that exceeds your supply, then of course you have to put control measures. You have to stop people filling up jerry cans in the back of the thing and running the garage, you know, running the fuel station out of stocks.
Solutions to the fuel crisis are being proposed and in some cases rolled out. The federal government will today introduce legislation allowing it to use public money to underwrite the delivery of extra fuel. And in Victoria and Tasmania, governments have made public transport free. Leading business group, the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, is backing a cut to road charges for trucks, but doesn't think the federal opposition's idea to halve the fuel excise is wise. Whichever approach is taken, John Blackburn says it's clear the country's leaders weren't prepared.
So what we've done with two crises in a row is fail to prepare, and in my view, it's because of our political system, which is short-term focused and combative. You can't deal with these major issues by people trying to score points with each other in Parliament. They have to work in a bipartisan way of doing this, and that's not in the culture there at the moment.
He'll travel to Canberra this week to propose a parliamentary inquiry into national resilience and preparedness.
We've never sat down and looked across the whole picture and go, how did we get in this mess? We're going to put that proposal up in this next week, and we're going to try and get both politicians and the public interested in saying, perhaps it's time we understood why we're in a mess. That might help us prepare for the next crisis.
National Cabinet will meet this morning.
Oliver Gordon reporting, and at that National Cabinet meeting, the leaders are expected to focus on voluntary measures to reduce the use of petrol and diesel. Meanwhile, the federal government is putting in place measures to financially support fuel companies trying to secure extra supplies from the international market. Chris Bowen is the Federal Energy Minister. Chris Bowen, thanks for speaking to AM this morning.
Pleasure, Mel. Good morning.
Now, you're introducing legislation to Parliament today to allow the government to underwrite the purchase of fuel supplies. Can you explain how that will work?
Yes, certainly. And maybe the why first, Mel, if I could briefly. As I've said multiple times, the ships that we're expecting to arrive in Australia have been arriving. But obviously, I'm in very close contact with all the refiners and importers. And they've told me, obviously, the market's getting a lot more expensive and a lot more volatile and a lot riskier. And for them, it's very difficult to buy cargoes which are maybe $25 million or more expensive than they were a few weeks ago, in such a volatile environment with the price of oil moving around. But it's unquestionably, Mel, in the national interest that those cargoes come here. So what we've said is we'll set up Export Finance Australia to help these firms hedge their risk so that they can make these purchases with confidence, so that they can buy these cargoes and get them on the way to Australia as soon as possible. It's a well-calibrated, vital intervention to assist with the flow of fuel to Australia over coming weeks and months should this situation keep going.
Is the issue that they can't borrow enough to make the purchase, or is the issue that they are worried they might not be able to sell it at enough of a price to make up for the cost if the spot market is bouncing around a lot?
It's a couple of issues, Mel. It's in some ways all the above. Smaller players, independent distributors who do import, they obviously don't have the same cash flow and balance strength that some of the really big players have. So they just find it impossible in this market to, with confidence, buy very expensive tankers, which might take a month to get to Australia. And by the time it gets to Australia, who knows what the oil price will be because of, you know, the very volatile situation in the Middle East. Then you've got larger players who say they're doing it at the moment, but there'll come a point if the price keeps going up or it gets more volatile where they simply won't be able to do it. Now, we don't want to see that situation emerge. So obviously this is ahead of the curve. It's one step ahead. It's not something which, you know, has been essential up until now, but from this point forward, we think it's absolutely vital that we have this flexibility.
When might it kick in? Is it a matter of how long this drags on, or is it a case of how high oil prices get as being the threshold?
We would like it to kick in straight away, so I'll introduce it into the Parliament today. We'll seek to pass it through the House of Representatives today and up to the Senate, and then seek Your Excellency the Governor-General's approval as a matter of urgency. But EFA has already started talking to the importers and the refiners over the weekend about examples of how it might work and comparing notes and getting ready to implement this as soon as it becomes the law of the land.
And you think they'd take that up straight away as soon as it's available?
Yeah, absolutely. I've already been talking to companies during the week who said, well, here's an example. You know, here are cargoes around the world that have just come on the market. You know, you've got to move fast here. They sell within a day or two, so you don't have weeks and weeks to work it through. EFA is a very commercially savvy organisation, which will be able to look at the books. It's not to support business as usual. If a company needs a contract just to a cargo to fulfil their normal contracts, that's a bit more expensive. That's not our role. Our role is to help companies in the spot market add to supply and to undertake transactions that they would find it very difficult to undertake by themselves in this very volatile international environment.
Is fuel rationing inevitable?
No, I don't think so, Mel, but of course governments are meeting, including today, on prudent planning. I think the important thing here is that Australians should have reassurance that after having been through COVID not that long ago, where the rules were changed quickly and governments were scrambling, not a criticism, that's not our approach in this instance. We want to see a coordinated approach. We want to see the lessons of COVID learned. And also, we want to make clear to the Australian people that, you know, where we think we'll be, we'll be signalled well in advance. It's not going to be 9 p.m. press conferences saying what you can and can't do tomorrow.
There's a bit of concern amongst the public that they're seeing what's happening overseas, where other countries are beginning to fuel ration or ration
sure,
fuel.
Of course.
And there's a concern of, is there a precaution that needs to be taken? Even if we're okay at the moment, would it be prudent to start now? What's your response to that concern?
Well, I think it's prudent to plan now. And of course, there's a number of gradations. And that's, I don't want to preempt what the Prime Minister and Premiers and Chief Ministers will be talking about today. But obviously, they'll be talking about, you don't just jump from one situation to the other. You talk about how we'll manage an unfolding situation together. That'll certainly be what we'll be putting to the First Ministers. And that's rational and sensible. And of course, then I'm sure the Prime Minister will update the Australian people soon after.
You've put in place a number of measures to try and make sure that the distribution of the fuel that is still coming in is getting around the country, but we're still seeing a lot of regional locations struggling to get enough fuel. What's not working at the moment in the distribution system?
Well, we have massively, when I say we, I mean the system, the private sector and the government working together, massively increased the distribution of fuel to regional Australia to keep up with the massive spikes in demand. So one provider has provided an additional 20% to go to farmers and regional communities, for example. And, you know, that's focusing on the farmers. So that doesn't mean a delivery to a service station. It means delivery to the distributors who distribute direct to farmers because they're cropping and seeding. Another has put an extra 1,200 kilolitres into the regional New South Wales, for example. Now, that is making a difference, but obviously, as long as demand is, you know, 100% more, then that will always struggle to keep up. But, you know, I've been talking to the retailers and refiners over the weekend. They're making good progress, a lot of deliveries over the weekend. Mm. But of course, you know, we're still dealing with, as you said, a lot of people with concerns and a lot of farmers who are trying to catch up because when the fuel was bought out, they'd had planned to buy fuel in coming weeks, but have found then that...
So it's still reverberating consequences from panic buying. That's the outcome, you think?
Well, some panic buying, but also just people buying ahead, a combination of events, but yes. And, you know, the answer is not buying more fuel. The answer, that's going to exacerbate shortages. The answer is buying as much fuel as you need, as much fuel as you normally get, no more, no less. Mm.
Chris Bowen, thanks very much for speaking to AM this morning.
Always a pleasure. Good morning to everyone listening.
And Chris Bowen is the Federal Energy Minister. Iran has warned its forces are waiting for US ground troops and will set them on fire if Donald Trump decides to put American boots on the ground. As thousands more US soldiers arrive in the region, American media outlets are reporting the Pentagon is preparing for weeks of ground operations. ABC correspondent Alison Horn reports from Jerusalem.
A toddler in Iran has just been pulled from the rubble of a building hit by an Israeli airstrike. The child is carried by a Red Crescent worker who's trying to wipe away the dust and debris that's mixed with blood on the toddler's face. Across this region, there is no reprieve from the deadly and costly war that's now in its second month. Sirens in Israel ring out for another incoming wave of Iranian ballistic missiles. US President Donald Trump has repeatedly spoken of background peace negotiations, but in a worrying sign, it appears both Washington and Tehran are gearing up for a major escalation. American reinforcements, 3,500 troops, have arrived into the region over the weekend. As the Washington Post reports, the Pentagon is preparing for weeks of ground operations in Iran, which the president is yet to approve. Iran's parliamentary speaker, Mohammad Baher Khalibaf, has accused the president of plotting a ground attack despite messages of diplomacy. He posted on social media,
"Our firing continues. Our missiles are in place. Our determination and faith have increased. Our men are waiting for the arrival of American troops on the ground to set them on fire and punish their regional partners forever."
On the streets of Tehran, civilians like Martin pray for a ceasefire.
"In my personal life, my mother is stressed. Family members are the same. Many people are frightened."
On another front in Lebanon, there's also fear and anger at the funeral for three journalists killed by Israel at the weekend. The IDF claims one journalist was a Hezbollah member but hasn't provided any evidence. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is also promising to widen his military's footprint into southern Lebanon, he says, to fight Hezbollah forces.
"I've now instructed them to further expand the existing security buffer zone in order to finally thwart the threat of invasion and to keep the anti-tank missile fire away from our border."
All signs from all sides that this war is still intensifying. This is Alison Horn in Jerusalem reporting for AM.
Travel cancellations are surging ahead of the Easter long weekend, with rising fuel prices upending holiday plans, hurting the local tourism sector. Some regional operators are offering fuel vouchers and flexible bookings to try to keep visitors on the road. Here's National Tourism reporter Christy Sexton-McGrath. That's the sound of an unusually quiet Easter at one of Sydney's biggest catteries. Normally, every pen here would be full as holidaymakers head off on long road trips. But this year, rising fuel prices and fears of shortages are putting plans on hold.
Past years, we've been booked out well and truly by this time and normally turn away business. This year, we're getting cancellations, even of the bookings that we do have. There's some uncertainty.
Michael Sims has run the business for decades, through recessions, the global financial crisis, even COVID. But right now, he says it's the uncertainty around fuel supplies that's stopping people from travelling.
People don't know if they can drive on out to New South Wales country region and might get stranded out there. I had a client who was taking his caravan out. He said he's got enough fuel to get out there, but he doesn't know when he's going to come back.
Across the country, tourism operators say travellers are staying closer to home or not travelling at all. In New South Wales, one of the state's biggest holiday park operators is trying to keep visitors on the road, offering fuel offset vouchers and helping staff manage the rising costs. Peter Chapman is the Reflections Holidays Executive Manager.
We've got 500 staff across regional and rural New South Wales, some of which travel a long way to come to work. So for anyone who's travelling further than 10 kilometres, to come to work with us. We've introduced a fuel allowance.
But even with incentives, behaviour is shifting. For travellers like Paula Candlish, it's not just the cost, it's the risk. After travelling 70,000 kilometres over the past 4 years, she and her husband have shelved a long-planned trip to Western Australia.
The fuel situation has just made it really difficult. I'd rather take the chance another time when we know that we can actually get fuel and keep moving.
And it's not just on land. In the tourism-reliant city of Cairns in far north Queensland, reef operators say soaring fuel costs are hitting boats, buses and accommodation providers. Mark Olson is from the region's peak tourism body.
Everyone knows boats are expensive. Running those on a daily basis out to the Great Barrier Reef or even just touring on the inlets. For our bus tour operators, our accommodation providers, everybody's seeing that cost of service increasing.
Back at the cattery, the cats don't seem to mind the extra space. But for the businesses that rely on the Easter rush, the quiet is hard to ignore.
Christy Sexton McGrath there. Tech giants Amazon and Meta are slashing jobs as they pivot to artificial intelligence. As AI reshapes the workplace, some roles are evolving, but others are disappearing entirely. 7:30's Alicia Thomas-Sam reports.
Shayon Dewaka runs a small Sydney startup and admits he has no human employees. Instead, the former Meta employee relies on a team of AI agents to run his company.
I use Claude code to write code. I'm using ChatGPT for marketing. I'm using Gemini to create videos. I'm really using every single tool available. Because the truth is, it's cheaper than hiring a human, if I'm being frank.
And he's not alone. Major tech companies Atlassian, Amazon and Meta have been laying off thousands of staff to pour billions into AI technology.
There is a certain amount of, we don't need as many humans as we used to, associated with these cuts, which is really sad.
Shayon Dewaka says every company should be considering AI tools to automate operations, and if they're not, they risk falling behind.
They will be replaced or overtaken by businesses that are augmenting humans with AI by the end of this year.
Earlier this month, major AI company Anthropic revealed which industries are most reliant on artificial intelligence. Professor Clinton Free from the University of Sydney mapped this data against Australian job listings.
The sort of categories of work which were heavily exposed were things like management, mathematics, what we would traditionally consider to be white-collar professional type jobs. You know, upwards of 90% of the tasks in those jobs are amenable to being replaced or displaced by AI.
Professor Free says there are roles with low exposure to AI, such as carers and gardeners. But he says a major upheaval in the workforce is coming.
And I think going forward, we're likely to continue to see delayering of middle management jobs and jobs in white-collar professions continue to erode. And I think by sort of 2028, 2030, we'll start to see autonomous workflows and agentic models really go mainstream.
Professor Clinton Free from the University of Sydney, ending that report by Alicia Thomas-Sam. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. With the Iran war sending the price of fuel skyrocketing, the trucking industry is amongst the hardest hit. So, how soon will the industry be electrified? Today, Dr. Scott Dwyer from the Institute of Sustainable Futures at UTS on the advancing technology. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.